I will quickly review the legal questions, because they always come up. We went over them pretty much yesterday, what the law is in this state. I need to check for any legal questions involved. Whether or not there are restrictions on transporting dead bodies, who can do it, how often. Something that's probably consistent in all states is the requirement of a death certificate. Home funerals are possible in Washington State. They have some states that's where they're not allowed. Home burial is possible in some states and not in others. It's not possible, we discussed yesterday, in Washington State. Scattering ashes or burying ashes is, again, varies, depends where you are. In this state, you can bury or scatter ashes on private property, on property, if you get permission of the landowner. Embalming is not required by law in the state of Washington. I expect there are states where it is required. The law also does not require any kind of covering for the body.
None at all?
No. Not, I'm talking about legally.
Yeah, probably.
Mm-hmm. What do you mean covering?
Clothing, shrouds, whatever.
Okay, you don't have to. They can go through.
Yeah. And also caskets are not required in this state. You can be buried in shrouds. I have a student once who was buried in his sleeping bag. Anyway, that's the main thing that she emphasized.
So those are the laws, but then the cemetery may have other requirements.
Yeah. But there is a remission of law. This depends on what you have to do. Yeah. If it's legal, you're required to do it. You have to break the law. The cemetery, you can decide to use a cemetery or not, or you can go to a different cemetery. It's your choice. Which may be fairly limited, depending on where you live.
That's true.
But it's still your choice.
Bring our ashes, you know, probably not bring our ashes up here, not maybe legally not, but if you do it, nobody's, you know, they don't have the ash police out or.
It's hard to recover.
I mean, the thing about ashes is that it's impossible for any police to enforce every single law.
Oh, yeah.
And so police are constantly making choices,
yeah,
using their discretion,
yeah, yeah,
what to enforce, not to enforce.
Yeah.
And my guess is, I never talked to police officers about this, but imagine, matter of discretion, that's way down the list.
Yeah.
Something they're looking to enforce.
Yeah. Bring them up in here.
Mm-hmm. I think if you did it in a way which upsets somebody else, like,
yeah,
it's in their yard or in their face or something, you might run into the police. But normally, I think scattering is pretty free. Okay, I'll bring us up from where we left off yesterday and do this fairly quickly, and then we'll go to the questions on the board. That's for our class, that's not for Vespers tonight.
Yeah, I got you. Okay.
Yesterday I gave you copies of this article. Everybody get this?
No,
I don't
think
okay. That was your reading assignment.
What?
Yeah, oh, that's, oh.
I didn't give
it.
We
had to leave early. She had to leave early, so.
Did you know?
No, I didn't.
There was all that talk about being late for dinner and caught on the video and all that stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Some people just got right out of it. I've got a few more of these if you want to take some.
Yes,
somebody will come in.
explained yesterday, we returned from our 4 months in Germany in fall of 2007 and had the experiences with the green burial over there. I came back here thinking this is something which needs to be brought to the attention of people here, and published that article in the March issue of 2008, which you have. Sometime after that, and I don't remember the exact time, but a month or two after the article came out, I received a phone call from a man named John Moles. John Moles is the owner of the main funeral home in Whatcom County. He is fourth generation funeral director in that county. And he called up and he said he'd like to get together and talk to me. And I agreed and thought, well, I was going to get a dressing down. He'd be very defensive about this article, accused me of attacking his business and his profession. To my surprise, he was very impressed by the article and said he wanted to begin to move in this direction. He thought these were important ideas, and he wanted to work with me and the local land trust, or the board of directors, toward the option of green burial. At that point, I set up a committee with the land trust to study this and explore how to go about it. Just as Moles surprised me with his positive attitude about this, I was also very surprised by the negative attitude of people in the land trust, who are all strong environmentalists, but they did not want to move in this direction for a variety of reasons. Some of them said, this is none of our business, we're not conserving land, not burying people on it. And I tried to explain this is a conservation method to be used. Anyway, I encountered opposition there. Eventually, the land trust stopped it. But Moles, John Moles, continued on. And that summer, hired a young man named Brian Flowers. And this picture is here in some of these newspaper articles. Brian's job, which Moles created for him, was to start a green burial program. And one of Moles owns about three or four cemeteries in Whatcom County and a number of mortuaries, but he picked the one called Green Acres, out in the county a bit, to do this. He charged Brian with that, and Brian got to work on it, and about a half year later, had set up this program. And they called it the credit.
Your wife.
Well, you never know what she knows.
She knows more than you think she knows.
Okay, you can just keep this. We'll discuss all this. Now, it describes the program, and it gives the prices on the back side of the sheet and what it costs. Well, they got that underway. They contacted the Green Burial Council, which we discussed yesterday, who who certified their program, made it official, and began advertising it. That made the meadow the first certified green burial site on the Pacific Coast. There are now several others. There's one in Goldendale, there's one on the Columbia River, and there's a couple, I guess, I've read about in Portland, Oregon. But the meadow was the first one. And they say there, they still claim that they're the first green burial program actually in an established cemetery. I talked to Brian before I came over here a couple of weeks ago. He says they feel that the meadow has been very successful. They've sold 33 lots in their first year. They've had 10 burials. And this is an interesting statistic you might think about. Of the 10 burials, 8 of the 10 burials have been in shrouds. Mm-hmm. Instead of coffins. Why is that? Well, if you're Jewish, that's required. Well, it depends on the form of Judaism, but if you're conservative Orthodox Jew, you're supposed to be buried in a shroud, not a coffin. He says they've had no problem. What they do, I can describe it. One of the things they do, they only bury the bodies 3 feet deep. And it goes down deeper than that, like 6 feet. The nutrients from the body can't be reached easily by the plant. So the plant 3 feet deep. They mound it over. The mound is about this high right after the burial. The reason for that is there's no concrete liners or anything. It's just the body, and either you can either be buried in a wooden coffin, which are made by a local Indian tribe, bury in that, or in the shroud. But whichever method's used, eventually that's going to collapse. And the earth is going to settle. They've had enough earth, so eventually after the coffin, the body decays, the earth is level. As it says in here, the family is allowed to plant whatever they wish on the grave if it's a native plant. And that's one problem he said they have had, is that some people have done unauthorized plantings. Two things he mentioned, there were tulips, which are not a native plant.
Seem like they shouldn't be.
Well, if you ever drive through Skagit County in the springtime, you think tulips are native plants and they're covered with them. And other people have put heather on the graves, which is also not native.
Oh. Maybe it's on the mountains.
Yeah.
Well, kinds of heather, probably Scottish heather or something. He just mentioned heather and tulips as being a problem. They've talked to the people about that, and they've had no serious arguments or disagreements. People agree to remove the invasive plants and plant something else. You can plant trees on the grave, you can plant the rhododendrons, native flowers, whatever. They don't mow it, they trim it back. It's pretty much, after it starts to grow up over the gravesite or something, they may cut it back. But they don't go on a lawnmower. It's not a lawn.
It's not a lawn, okay.
Like a field?
It's sort of like an open field. But also they don't want invasive plants to come in. Mm-hmm. Where we live, at least, if you didn't do something for about 2 or 3 years, it'd be covered with blackberries. Blackberries, ivy, things like that, were kept out. But the tending of it is kept very minimal. They don't take heavy equipment in there. And the idea is, as I put yesterday, this is a restored site. This was a waste site. They had to remove a lot of trash and junk out of it, clear the ground, get down to the soil, bring in some soil for the trees. But the idea is that it will eventually become forest-like again, you know, like a park, and people will be able to walk around on the trails. As it explains there, you can't have a typical headstone. You can have, at the grave site, a river boulder. They're about so big, and with the name and dates on it. And again, it's supposed to be a natural rock. Just another side note, move on to having our discussion. This was an operation after, when it started, the Moles donated a grave site to the land trust auction. Yeah, we have an auction, a fundraising auction. I went out and asked them if they donated a grave site, which they did, put in the auction. And the first year we had it in the auction, it was about in the middle of the auction. And it sold, I think, for most of the $2,000 price, or $1,800. But some people were very upset by having a grave site in our upbeat, happy auction. And so it came around this year for an auction this year, and I'm on the auction committee, and I said, well, I'll get another grave site, since it's sold. And I was told no. We don't want it. They said it deadened the auction.
Thank you.
It depressed everybody to have a grave site, the auction.
Yeah.
And I said, as politely as I could, that's crazy. Moles is a good supporter of the land trust. This is a very important project. It's important to promote it and advertise it. So I went and got another grave site, brought it in. They didn't. The guy in charge of the auction didn't reject it, but he put it as the very last thing. And everybody's leaving the auction at that time. We still make $1,200 or $1,300 off it. But anyway, what reason I'm telling that little story is it's just another example of what we saw about in our third session about death denial. People don't want to be at a happy time like a land trust auction to be confronted with the fact of death. Okay. Now, the questions on the board. This is the end of our session. We've been thinking about this all week. So, the first question up there is, what do you want? What do you want? Before we go to that, let me just review some more things quickly. And that is the cost of cremation, the environmental cost of cremation. As we said yesterday, cremation involves releasing CO2 into the atmosphere, and other toxics from the body. It involves using fossil fuels and energy, emitting heat, and so on. There are now new technologies being experimented with and actually in practice. This first one is now in practice in Australia, and I guess there's a place in Florida that does it. It's called water cremation. Now, water cremation involves putting the body in a mixture of water, H2O, and potassium hydroxide. A mixture of what the components are. Put that together, the body goes in that for about 2 hours and dissolves. And comes out and then can be like a mustache on this board.
Well, does it come out as liquid or can it be dry?
It can be dry.
So that would be
turned into a powder.
Powdery.
A powder.
Dehydrated.
The other method being experimented with, and Moles is looking at the water cremation thing. They're afraid people will find that really repulsive, the idea of turning somebody into soup. But as something I read said, when they first started cremation in this country, people thought that was very offensive and inhumane and everything.
Yeah, okay.
It's just probably getting your ideas, getting used to something. The other method is, this is my language, freeze dry. That method, you put the body in liquid nitrogen and vibrate it, and it turns into a fine powder.
It goes grandma. What'd you say?
It goes grandma.
I said this before, someone started making jokes about vibrators, but I don't know that. Anyway, it turns it into a powder. Both of those methods are aimed at avoiding the environmental impact of cremation. And they're, at this time, they're not available, at least in this area. So, now armed with that great knowledge, at this point, what would you decide to do? Well, Pat and I will start off. We own 40 some acres of land on the Cascade River west of the mountains, near a little town called Marble Mount. We have a small log cabin on the property. It's not developed. Basically, it's forest land. It's protected forest land. And we have thought that that's where we would like to have our ashes put. There are already some ashes and other people there, including a couple of dogs. So not the ashes of the dogs, the actual dogs. Oh, anyway, we thought that's our favorite place. And that's where we'd like to be, and it's important to our children and so on. But to do that, we would have to be cremated, which we'd always sort of kind of do anyhow. But now, learning about the environmental costs of cremation, we're having second thoughts. At least I'm having second thoughts about it. At least reconsidering the cremation. As I explained yesterday, having our bodies buried there is just not an option. We're going to put up $50,000 worth of bonds that we're burying bodies. So and there is the option now, right near Bellingham, of the meadow instead of our property.
What about one of the other processes?
Well, they just are not available yet.
Right now.
Right now.
Mm-hmm. If they became available, you said the moles were looking at.
Moles are looking at the water cremation. And I'll keep in contact with them, and if that develops.
I'm not sure your daughter would go for that.
Anyway, I think you have to think in terms of what these are all what if kind of questions. What if something happened, we die within the next year? We'd like to hang around longer than that. So, but as things change, we will try to keep it updated. But right now, it's a discussion. Do we still want to proceed with our original plans or reconsider and do this and support this business, which is doing something we think is sound, we hope will grow. But my personal feeling is, again, it comes from watching what happened in Germany and knowing what was going on in England and Australia, especially in England, that at some point this idea is going to catch on. A lot of it was, it's going to get, well, it's another question I raised there on the board. People may start to think about it more biblically. Ashes to ashes, dust to dust, back to me.
I have a question about that, which I may have missed you discussing that because I was late a couple times and so on. Where did the whole process of the metal casket, the cement wall, where did that all come from?
The embalming started after the Civil War.
So they can transport the bodies.
Transport the bodies back to their home. If you were killed at Vicksburg, for example, and you came from Rhode Island or Massachusetts,
home, yeah.
You'd have to get home. And remember, this is 1860, 1870. You can't put it on a chicken flat home. We can get a body home from Europe or almost anywhere in the world now in a matter of hours. But in 1870, you get a body from Vicksburg to Boston is going to take weeks. It's going to have to become horse and carriage, even on a train or on ships on canals and things. It's a matter of weeks. Depending on the time of year, even in the wintertime, it's not. So they started the practice of embalming. At first it was a lot of art, used a lot of arsenic and other chemicals. Eventually moved on to formaldehyde. I have to go review again about the history of caskets and coffins. For most people, up in the 20th century, it was a pine box. It's some kind of container for a body. And probably the practice of fancy coffins and things was for the upper classes, the aristocracy, royalty. And my guess is that if people went into funeral business, they thought, well, here besides some burial plots, here's another chance to make coffins. And the whole idea that we...
I, as a commoner, can be buried like a king.
Right. Mm-hmm. And I think it's often sold that way. Mm-hmm. It's certainly often sold that this is a way you show respect for your mother or spouse or whatever by putting them in something as beautiful and ornate. I think that has grown over time. It's certainly not a universal practice. If you look at burial practices all over the world, Western Europe and the United States are fairly exceptional. Mm-hmm. Both the cost of it, but the ornate nature of how we want to deal with dead bodies.
They could take a fancy coffin and just reuse it, keep it ice underneath, and just keep reusing it so that you, when you have the service,
there's the body. You have a family coffin that would go down through generations.
Yeah, and then they
get
cremated after they have the ceremony with
yeah.
the body.
And the cement vaults, why, what's the history of that?
That's the sales pitch on coffins is to protect the body. Okay. The biggest threat to the body is water. So they sell the coffins as being airtight and watertight. The coffins are sealed. But they can't totally seal them off, and you also don't want to think of the coffin floating in the water. So the burial vault is to keep the water away from the coffin. It's made of concrete, reinforced steel.
Kind of silly.
The sales pitch.
Yeah, because who would know? Who would know what's going on?
Well, yeah. The other rationale for the burial vault is to keep the ground level.
Yeah.
Okay.
Keep the ground level, also in our area. Frost brings things up, so they had a bunch of shoes come out. Here's what we're down, Martha's shoes.
I went to an old family burial plot. Yes, and the bones were coming up. I mean, it was very old.
So it's for many cemeteries, it's to keep something below the grass. That's why they don't have sandy headstones in place anymore.
Thank you.
So at this point, what do you want to do?
Well, one of my primary concerns, I guess, and I approach this whole thing is one of environmental stewardship, which certainly is a dimension of what you're talking about here. And I certainly think this green burial concept is much better than what we've had in the past. But I think we still need to evolve beyond the idea of dedicating space on earth for the deceased. That's my personal opinion. Because as you pointed out, you talked about how much space is used in the regular cemeteries, and multiply that times years, and multiply it times the billions of people that are alive today and will be alive tomorrow, that I just feel that we should not dedicate any land for this specific purpose. So I guess at this point, cremation would be our choice, is our choice, it's in our will. However, I'm excited about these other options.
As I think I mentioned one of the sessions, there's an article in the Economist magazine about Hong Kong. They're even having trouble finding space for cremated remains, all the earth because of the population.
Yeah, right.
I think the thing that appeals to me most is, I think I mentioned this yesterday, is with there's a whole chapter in Harris's book about this, is when it's part of a restoration process. It's when land has been badly damaged or destroyed, and bodies are being put in there as part of the restoration process with the idea that to a certain number of years, it will not be a cemetery, a special place, but it will be protected as in its natural state.
If you had one of the stone markers, it would still be there, possibly.
When we visited our relative, my wife's family in Stuttgart, Germany, all the old tombstones were post-World War II, because then people came in and all the tombstones off, and they put it in a plowed field. $60 a year for someone to take care of the grave. But the question should be $60 a year.
Yeah. Well, when you read, if you read the article on the other side, by my friend, my Olex, he gives the costs in Germany of traditional burial. He was more than $60.
Oh, yeah, I thought he said it was around $200 a year.
120-year-olds or something.
Yeah, for 25 years. Before you get
in there.
If you don't pay.
I based my decision on something that my son did. He was in his early 20s.
Mm-hmm.
He was 6 when my father died. And my parents have plot in the cemetery in Southern California. And so we, of course, went to the funeral and to the burial site. As far as I know, he may have been there one other time that we went and visited. I think he may have been when he was a teenager or younger. At any rate, he was driving a tour bus from Northern California to Southern California. So on one of his trips, he took the bus and went to that cemetery just based on memory of what it was, because he wanted to visit their grave sites. And I was quite impressed by that. And I decided, found out that I could actually be buried in the same plot as my mother. And so I made arrangements for that. When before she died, had the contract changed. I had to pay a little bit of, not very much money, to have it changed, so two bodies could be in the same site. One has to be cremated. So, and her body was cremated. So in a sense, I'm going to leave that possibility up to my children to decide whether they want to cremate me or water me or pickle me. Not pickle me, but the other one. And or the whole body, depending on what their feelings are at the time. I feel like I don't really care, although now, if I were starting from scratch, I would really be looking green burial.
Mm-hmm.
I think this is a great idea. I like the ashes to ashes, dust to dust part of it too.
Well, you touched on another question I put up there on the board, and that is, who decides?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I sort of come from the point of view, I really don't care. My spirit is gone, wherever spirits go, and it want to do in terms of what's important to them and memories and place to go or not place to go, but
that is a part of it, I think. My mother's people are all buried pioneers in Douglas County, Oregon, in this little pioneer cemetery from all end to end. And so it has been a place. So having a place. So, and I have only one child, a 20-year-old. And so to begin to talk with her so that we can come to some kind of agreement about what my wishes are and what will be comfortable for her and how to have a place, whether it's a bench in a park or a tree that gets planted or some sort of memorial spot, like your family having land your kids can go back to. But you also mentioned you didn't think his daughter would be happy with the soup method.
So it's
having those conversations as a family, hopefully, all along the way, how we, of course, raise our young people with attitudes about death and dying, how we ourselves accept our end, and planning for that. For those of us who value a sense of connection and a legacy, having a conversation, an ongoing conversation.
One of the problems we had was where you want to be buried. My hometown, now there's no one around anymore. I mean, there's the churches I've served, there are a lot of them cemeteries, but I don't, my kids don't know these people anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is why we're over in ashes to ashes. Jokingly, I say we're going to give everybody an envelope full of my ashes when they leave service.
That's how you get rid of them.
But you know, I'm talking dividing my ashes in different places. Maybe the churches would try to serve.
Well, where's your mother's at?
Well, when my mother died and she was cremated, Dad took her, they used to ride bicycles, they lived in Vancouver, BC, and they'd ride out to the water and ride back. So Dad took her ashes out there, except that my younger sister had pulled some out without me knowing it, because she wanted to take some to my brother's farm. I thought I would take Mom into the Grand Canyon. I was going to leave her down there, but I kept forgetting, so she kept coming back. Finally, I sent them to my brother, told him to do something. But it was, you know, we just kept thinking of other places that Mom had spent time. Mm-hmm. And
there's a lot of symbolistic things. So.
Yeah,
I don't just have one place to. This is a question I'm going to ask you. What are you cremated? There's a lot of bones that are not burned up, aren't they, for you?
No.
Oh, they're bigger pieces.
They're bigger pieces.
There's some large. Well, like your knee, probably.
Mm-hmm.
And usually they'll grind them up.
Oh, okay.
Or they'll pulverize them in some way.
So they give
more
them,
than that, you know?
I heard that they'll give you all the same ashes. They give you the easy accessible ashes.
What'll happen when we're bionic? You know, we're replacing joints.
They'll have
you
to
know?
Take
my mom has knees and hips and shoulders.
Oh, yeah.
It's like,
well, my mother was cremated. I got a separate package from the ashes.
Oh,
I got,
and that was
the hip joint replacement.
I hadn't thought about this.
Yeah, I've got three replacements. You'll get them if we all go together.
We just talked about England getting a gold out of their mouths. I got to think a lot about, you know, our knees and our other parts of our body. Are they just going to stick with gold because they want one more gold?
It's not the gold, I don't think. It's the mercury and the
silver
fillings.
You know, another thing I think is important to me here that we talked about, you mentioned, and you mentioned also, this conversation with people who are alive. And I think my primary question is how do I want to be remembered? What is the legacy that I'd like to see for my parents, for example? It was endowment funds to continue the ministries that they felt were important. So that's really where I guess I want to see all of my money go. and as little as possible upon disposing of the corpus.
Mm-hmm. Well, look what your girl's mother's. It's a bench. Around the lake.
Yeah.
So that always when they come up to visit, they always go out to that bench.
Yeah.
The park. It's a park.
Mm-hmm. But he mixed the ashes in to make a cement bench.
Could.
Yeah, well, that's an interesting thought. Then they're kind of permanent, though. Then they go back to the earth.
Yeah.
That's.
But there's also a scholarship.
Yeah. I was thinking of some place that they can go.
But they do go out there. Well, I think the important thing, one of the important things that's circulating around our discussion is that this needs to be a matter of conversation with other family members, not just our own personal decision, but it involves them. And, it's just a healthy thing to do.
Well, I'm a hospice worker, and so, at the point at which the family has some guidance, that mom or dad or whoever has been able to outline or share, the family is so relieved by that guidance because, I mean, it may not be in harmony with what they would choose to do, but at least they're able to follow mom or dad's wishes, and that's immensely helpful for them.
Yeah.
It's the lack of conversation and the lack of guidance that leaves families in more distress, I think.
Yeah, we've got a file that says funeral arrangements, and we've put things in there.
Right.
Think about music.
Yeah.
Yeah, the funeral director gave a presentation about alternatives. And one of his statements in there was the cost of cremation should not be the only consideration. And I asked him, why not, you know? And he went into this thing of grieving. Some people need different types of experiences at death. And I thought, particularly the movie with this young child suddenly dying, I mean, that'd be so traumatic. I don't know what I'd do, you know.
And to have that just because I think the child had to go to the coroner's.
Yeah, we're going to take
it out. So, you know, just gone immediately. And I helped when my mother died, she was in a nursing home, and I helped prepare her body to help clean her up and prepare her for the mortuary, which to me was very
closure.
Thank you. I couldn't think of the right word.
That
it really helped, rather than just saying goodbye and leaving, but to really help with that. It was comforting too. Real closure.
I really mourn the fact that we don't honor the body. I do more and more memorial services and less funerals with the body.
Yeah.
It's kind of like to make it real.
The problem there is if you have the body there before your cremation, you're paying the whole works.
Yeah.
And that's $4,000 to $5,000. And my wife decided if I'm worth that much.
But not if you're at home.
Yeah, if you as a home burial.
Like movie yesterday, wasn't it?
Puts mice on and
have your
thoughts and conversations with the body and then have it cremated.
Yeah. But even that takes forethought.
Yes.
You've got to know how to do that, and not start learning on the spot.
Well, I just wonder if there's different makeups of people, you know, for whom having the actual body present at a funeral as opposed to a memorial service. I wonder what is behind all that difference. I feel opposite the way you do, but I certainly can respect because my two daughters perceive it differently.
Mm-hmm. Different personalities. I guess I was raised, we put people in the ground. So we stood over, we dug the hole, we stood over the hole, we blessed the hole, we put the body in the hole. So it was just kind of that pioneer earthy way.
They talked about having
or beer. I'm getting a heated unit.
An electric cordial. Oh,
like a nightlight.
Are you saying how and rationale or rational?
How will you decide what to do?
Yeah.
On what rationale?
There we go. You just misspelled it.
Yeah.
Oh. There's no E on it. You know me, I'm a proofreader.
I'm rational too.
You know, you mentioned Japan. Do you know what the thinking is? What's going on now that they realize they're running out of land and so forth?
I don't know what they mean.
Hong Kong, was it?
Yeah. Hong Kong.
Right,
probably Japan.
Yeah, Hong Kong, China, yeah. You mentioned, yeah.
They're creating some places on islands off the coast. The article talked about that, but I don't know what the numbers are.
Yeah, right. Well, guys, thank you for working so hard on all this. You had a running start, though, didn't you?
How dangerous is the body? Germs and stuff like this. And you mentioned it a couple of times that we have to wear bodies and
fluids.
Would that temperature kill whatever kind of sickness you might have had?
The temperature would have
cremation.
Yeah, cremation, that's what I'm thinking.
And what about the other two methods?
I assume they would. One thing to remember is you're always reminded about here at Holden, disinfecting your hands all the time.
Yeah, yeah.
And I don't know what percentages are, we talked about that, but contagious disease, a very high percentage of those are conducted by personal contact
That's
with
right.
a sick person.
Yeah.
Your hands or your
yeah.
breath or something,
yeah.
mainly through hands.
Yes.
Yeah.
And your mouth.
Your mouth.
Put your hands in your mouth.
Yeah. And they found that a large percentage of people who die in hospitals, not from whatever they're being treated for, but by from infections and things in hospitals, comes from personal contact.
And the doctor's not washing that.
Doctors, nurses,
right.
and so on, they're getting much more strict about that.
Yeah, they are.
Hospitals. So probably
overuse of antibiotics.
Yeah.
Yes.
Not people not using them properly.
That's right, you can use them too much, can't you? I mean, there's
well,
sanitation
where
thing,
you
isn't
don't,
it?
You don't, yeah, you can use too much, like bacterial soap.
Bacterial soap,
and the
yeah.
The germs just begin to like to grow in
yeah,
there.
Right.
Just
yeah.
use regular soap and just wash it over.
I saw a poster in the doctor's office that said, if you don't think your doctor or your care, the person who the nurse has washed their hands, tell them.
Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
No, isn't that something?
The other thing that they've done in a lot of hospitals is they put in the sanitizer like we have on
oh.
the table.
Oh,
and doctors,
yeah.
are, my understanding is doctors will come in and use it. Do you have any sense of that? But when
yeah.
it's there and handy,
yeah.
they just have to squeeze it and
yes.
this,
it's coming and going, in and out.
Yeah.
No, it's very strict now. It's a national patient safety goal.
It is.
Yeah.
Yeah, because when you were in the hospital, they had, that was just becoming, they were becoming very aware of, you know, using an antibiotic. So, sanitizer. Because outside your room, there was a sanitizer as you went in.
Yeah.
If you went to visit,
yeah.
you did your
yeah,
hands.
Right.
And if you came out, again,
yeah.
you did your hands.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's something, infectious disease control is
yeah.
the heading of it. But hand
that's
hygiene
good. That's really good.
Is,
yeah.
is a huge issue. Maybe people would get sick in hospitals from the lack of.
And when we have had large epidemics like plagues and things, usually the conveyors of that, if not humans, are animals of some sort.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that the chance of innate human remains after years draining out and infecting people are very small.
Yeah. Yeah.
Particularly if they're not placed near the water table. Mm-hmm. I mean, is that a consideration in the burial places that you're not close to the water table?